not at his waist. The scabbard was suppressing the aura within, but his powerful senses saw through it. The aura was identical to that of Jason Asano, so much that Soromir almost felt like Asano was standing in front of him. Part of that was the sword had a profound soul bond to its owner, and part was the nature of Asano himself. Soromir knew what a Gestalt being was, and that this nature was responsible for Asano's aura feeling almost tangible. His soul was not separate from his physical being. It gave a substantive feeling to the projection of that soul, his aura. Dawn followed Soromir's gaze and reached out to touch the pommel of the weapon. It disappeared from his senses as completely as if it had been teleported away. Soromir recognized that it was not any kind of essence ability that hid it, but pure aura manipulation. He wondered if Dawn had been responsible for Jason's aura control, which was as formidable for his rank as his aura's strength. He was not fool enough to ask the question, however. Once the people had walked off the cottage garden and onto the large landing pad, the cottage floated into the air. The globe once more appeared around it as the cottage rapidly shrank. Once it was small enough to fly into Dawn's hand, she set it at the point where her dress cinched at the waist, the globe hanging like an ornament despite not being attached to anything. Soromir led Dawn away, leaving the gaggle of people to Liara and Trenchant. Trenchant moved up to stand beside Liara as one of the group stepped forward. To the pair's surprise, it was not the gold ranker but one of the silvers who stepped forward to represent the group. He was a large human with broad shoulders, olive complexion, and dark hair. He bowed to a carefully measured depth to each of the gold rankers, demonstrating his etiquette training. "My name is Humphrey Geller of Greenstone."
"Liara Rimaras. This is Commander Trenchant Moore of the Royal Guard."
"Greetings, Your Highness. Commander, on behalf of my companions, I thank you for your hospitality."
"That's a princess? This day's turning out pretty sweet."
"Tiger, you're making Humphrey look bad."
"Sorry, Neil. Sorry, Princess Bro. It's nice to meet you all."
The Man Mountain's voice was friendly and surprisingly high-pitched. The Celestine and another silver-rank woman snorted out laughter while Humphrey took on a long-suffering expression.
"Lindy."
"Clive, he called her Princess Bro. How are you not laughing?"
"Time and place, Belinda," Clive said.
"Sophie's laughing too," Belinda pointed out.
"I don't think Clive's stupid enough to tell her off," Gary said. "She's too scary."
"That's sweet of you to say, Gary," Sophie told him, putting a hand on his forearm. "I apologize for my companions, Your Highness," Humphrey said. "They're working adventurers and spent little time in high society."
"At least we won't need to double-check who they are," Trenchant said. "They're obviously the companions of Jason Asano."
The auras of the group had been a mix of curiosity, wonder, eagerness, trepidation, and nervousness. As soon as Jason Asano's name passed Trenchant's lips, however, that changed. 6 auras locked onto Trenchant like snipers. The others reacted, but the 6 that were now raptor-focused on Trenchant were suddenly so sharp and alert that Liara felt her hackles rise. Even though she outranked them all, and the attention wasn't directed at her, it was pointed enough that she was impressed at Trenchant's lack of reaction. Of the visitors, only the unreadable gold ranker at the back maintained her equanimity at the mention of Asano. She stepped forward to defuse the situation.
"We are all acquaintances of Mr. Asano," she said with a short bow. "Arabelle Ramore of Vitesse. While we don't wish to be rude, we have travelled far to meet friends long thought lost to us. We do not wish to dismiss your hospitality, but we would like to see Jason Asano and Farrah Hurin at the earliest opportunity. My son should be with them."
"Jason Asano is currently on a contract," Liara said. "It was moved up unexpectedly due to builder activity, so he is expected back shortly. As far as I know, Miss Hurin and Mr. Ramore should be at their shared residence in Arnot, one of the main islands of Rimaros."
"If you will follow me," Trenchant Moore said, "I will take you there directly."
Chapter 53. Meanwhile, 2 weeks ago in Vitesse. Jason was disembarking from the airship that had just returned his expedition to Rimuros. He was moving with the group across the open-sided walkway stretching from the docking cradle to the port tower when he froze on the spot.
Mr. Asano?
Asked the expedition leader, Jenny Cavaloa.
We're done, right? Jason asked. Expedition over?
The contract is complete, Mr. Asano. I'll be handing in the report, but you can get a copy of...
She stopped when Jason leapt from the side of the walkway without another word. She shook her head.
You're not meant to do that.
Unbeknownst to Jason, at the moment he had been leaving the airship, his friends had been leaving the Royal Sky Island's magic barrier under the escort of Trenchant Moore. As they left the island's magical defences, which easily blocked his silver rank powers, their presence was brought to his attention.
Contact. Humphrey Geller has entered communication range. Contact. Sophie Wexler has entered communication range. Contact. Belinda Callahan has entered communication range. Contact. Gareth Zandia has entered communication range. Contact. William Huron has entered communication range. Contact. Amelia Huron has entered communication range. Contact. Arabelle Ramore has entered communication range. Contact. Travis Noble has entered communication range. Contact. Tyka Williams has entered communication range. Contact. Neil Devone has entered communication range. Contact. Clive Standish has entered communication range.
As he dropped through the air, Jason conjured his cloak to help him swerve around walkways connected to ships docked further down the tower.
Where are they? Jason asked. I can't map their location without spreading my aura over the whole damn city, and I'd get into all sorts of trouble for projecting like that. Should I do it anyway?
Perhaps before doing anything drastic, Shade suggested, you could try asking them where they are. Jason landed at ground level, getting disapproving frowns from the people around him at the base of the busy docking tower.
Asking them, that makes sense. I can do that because it's a thing I can do.
I recommend you pause and take a breath, Mr. Asano.
I don't need to breathe, Shade.
Perhaps you should do it anyway. Unaware of Jason's proximity, his team and the others with them were moving down through a column of water in a boat shrouded by a force bubble. For the Earthlings, Tyka and Travis, the iconic local feature was a wonder. Even for those used to other great cities like Vitesse, it was an impressive feat of magical engineering. Sophie felt Humphrey go stiff at her side, and he started talking to himself.
Where are you? He said.
The others noticed Humphrey acting strangely and listened to what was clearly one side of a conversation. They all recognized such behavior, but hadn't seen it in some time. With a man named Trenchant Moore, Humphrey said.
Yes. Trenchant Moore? What?
I don't know. Humphrey turned to look Trenchant up and down. I guess he is, Humphrey continued. I suppose he has very piercing eyes. I don't see why that... He's taking us to Arnott. I think we're switching to a larger boat on the big island. Humphrey turned to look at Trenchant again.
Where are we transferring to the other boat? He asked him.
Essen Port, Trenchant said. A private terminal for a ferry called the Blue Burden. Humphrey repeated the details.
How am I supposed to know that? Yes, it does kind of sound like the ferry is unhappy about carrying people about.
What?
No, it's probably not a sentient boat. Even if it is some kind of animated construct, I don't think it will have feelings.
What's a danger boat?
Tick, as in the parasite.
Jason's team were laughing at the very familiar expression on Humphrey's face and the very confused one on Trenchant's.
Look, are you going to meet us at the ferry terminal or not?
Okay, thank you. Humphrey slumped his shoulders, looking exhausted. And Jason?
It's good to hear your voice, Jason.
That's nice of you to say, but please don't call me Hump.
The only portal destination near the port was restricted to reduce port traffic congestion, and Jason didn't have a permit. Nor did he have a permit for personal flight in the city. As for ground navigation via mount or vehicle, it would be slower than he wanted through the bustling streets. Instead, Jason turned to his old techniques for travelling quickly on foot.
Compared to the Delta, where he first developed them, the city was easier terrain, and Jason's abilities were so much stronger than when he was an Iron Rank. His reflexes, perception, and straight-line speed were all improved, as was his control over his abilities. The techniques were a holistic combination of movement skills taken from the Order of the Reaper, precisely toggled weight reduction and jumping through shadows in rapid sequence. It allowed him to navigate obstacles and go largely unnoticed as he raced through the city, a flickering shadow passing through market stalls and alleyways as he followed his map ability towards the port. Essen was one of the primary ports for traffic between Liveros and Arnot. It was where Jason and Farah had been reunited with Rufus, and now where they would reunite with the rest of their friends. Jason found the ferry terminal, but the Port Authority guards would not permit him entry. What they would do was point out the dock where boats coming from the Royal Sky Island usually moored. Having been contacted by Jason while he was on the move, Rufus and Farah were ready when Jason opened a portal to the Cloud House for them to come through. While the nearby terminal guards watched him closely, he was opening a portal to somewhere else and not portaling in blindly, so it was permitted. Farah was less forgiving than the guards as she marched out of the portal into Jason's space and started jabbing a finger at his face.
"What were you thinking going off like that?"
She snatched him into a hug.
"If Shade wasn't with you, how stupid a thing would you have done?"
"It was pretty bad," Jason said. She let him go, hands on his shoulders as she gave him an interrogating look.
"What are we going to do with you?" she asked. "I wish Rufus's mother was here."
"She's on that boat," Jason said, pointing out at the water behind her.
"Mother came too?" Rufus asked.
Jason, Rufus, and Farah watched as the boat approached. It wasn't much more than an outsized skiff, and they could see familiar faces on the deck. Gary's grin was so wide it threatened to split the top of his head right off as he waved. A falcon came darting over the water from the boat, shooting at Jason like an arrow. Right before impact, it turned into a hairy dog the size of a tiger, bowling him over and crushing him under its weight.
"Yay!"
the dog cheered with a child's voice.
"Stash!"
Jason croaked.
"You got big!"
"I can get bigger! Want to see?"
"Nope!"
"Stash!" Humphrey admonished. "Get off him!" The dragon wings that had carried Humphrey over the water in pursuit of his enthusiastic familiar vanished as he alighted on the dock. Stash transformed into a small bird that flapped around in the air over Jason as Humphrey helped him to his feet. Jason didn't let go of his hand, pulling the big man into a hug.
"Good to see you, brother."
"Good to see you alive," Humphrey said.
"We should have known that if anyone was going to treat the laws of life and death as rough guidelines, it would be you."
A portal appeared on the dock, a rainbow circle edged in floating runes. Gary barreled out of it and caught Farah in a huge hug. The big man picked the small woman up entirely, spinning around in his joy.
"You realize that if I didn't have a strength power," she told him, laughing as he spun her around, "you'd have just crushed me to death."
Sophie, Belinda, and Clive followed Gary through the portal at a more sedate pace before it ran out of energy and closed. Jason approached them with a grin. He could sense the nervousness in Humphrey and especially Sophie, and the interplay between their auras. He chuckled to himself as he moved to greet Clive. There were handshakes and hugs all around, as friends once thought gone forever came back together. Jason basked in their welcoming auras, without making a single 80s reference they didn't understand. The boat arrived at the dock, allowing the rest of the group to disembark. Trenchant Moore brought up the rear, Jason noting how the man's gaze went straight to Farah. Jason couldn't read the man's aura, so was left wondering at the man's intention, but had far more important things to attend to. Farah did as well, as two of the group's bronze rankers were her parents. They hurried down the gangplank to catch up to their daughter in a teary-eyed hug. Neil wandered down the gangplank after them and swiftly found himself facing off with Jason.
"I see someone finally taught you how to dress," Jason said.
"Thus coming from a guy wearing that," Neil said, gesturing at Jason's floral shirt and shorts.
I see you've been enjoying your time in the tropics. Meanwhile, 2 weeks ago in Vitesse, we were working our butts off to get you back when a pile of your trouble gets dumped right on our heads. The hostile expressions of the two men cracked, and they laughed, shaking hands warmly. Jason then looked to the other bronze rankers leaving the boat.
Speaking of trouble, what are you doing here, Travis?
That's kind of a long story, Mr. Asano. Travis Noble was a member of the US network on Earth who had been pulled into Jason's orbit. He had converted a nuclear weapon into an anti-vampire sun bomb that Jason had used to attack a vampire-held astral space.
You were sucked into some magic whatever and fell out here? Jason guessed.
I guess it's not that long a story, Travis conceded.
And how many times do I have to tell you to call me Jason?
Sorry, Mr. Asano.
Jason chuckled as he turned to Taika, sharing a grin with the big Maori.
I got you here after all, Jason said.
That's pretty crazy, bro. I'm kind of freaking out.
You and me both, Jason said, throwing a look to Arabelle and exchanging a note of greeting.
I think we should stop obstructing the dock and make our way onto the ferry, Trenchant suggested.
When's it scheduled to leave? Jason asked.
It belongs to the royal family, Trenchant said. I'm under direction from Princess Liara to bring them to your abode on Arnot.
Your boss was dragging his feet, Jason said. What changed?
Trenchant's gaze flicked briefly back to Farah before returning to Jason.
You have loyal friends, Mr. Asano.
Argy was overseeing the loading of a crate of the Argy fruit for which he was nicknamed when something unusual appeared in front of him.
You have received a voice chat request from Jason Asano. Accept? Yes, no.
Okay. Argy! Jason's voice came directly into Argy's head. I've got friends in town and I'm looking to chuck a barbie. Help a bloke out with sourcing some food?
No problems, fella, Argy said.
Thanks, mate. I'll have Shade swing by with some funding. It's going to be an intimate affair, so maybe don't invite the entire town this time. Try and keep it to below a third.
I'll do what I can, Argy said. But you know how people get to talking. You going to need drinks?
I think we might, yeah.
Trenchant Moore escorted the group all the way to the Cloud House before departing. He left quickly, finding something disconcerting yet unplaceable about the cloud construct, which was wholly impenetrable to his senses. Inside, an impromptu party started as the group drank and told stories about all that had happened in their time apart. Food and barbecue started to arrive, and they moved outside as Jason organized things. He was getting good at managing large-scale entertainment events, at least his particular brand of them. After the celebratory gathering, the group split off for more intimate reunions over the course of the evening. Farah and her parents, Rufus and his mother, Rufus, Gary and Farah, reunited for the first time since the disastrous expedition that claimed the lives of many adventurers alongside her. Clive was chomping at the bit to ask Jason about every single aspect of every single thing that had happened in his time away.
Clive, Jason said with a laugh as he set out tubs of marinade on the table.
We'll have plenty of time to get to that.
Just put in these meat strips like I showed you. I'll have to magic them up a bit since I can't leave them in as long as I'd like.
Jason took the time to speak with everyone at some point during the night's revelry. Farah's parents were effusive in their gratitude for bringing their daughter home to them. Jason teased Clive mercilessly with hints of the astral magic he'd been involved with and traded good-natured barbs with Neil. Taika and Travis assured Jason that his family were safe and sound, although Jason had them save the full story for later. It was late in the evening when Jason found himself on the balcony on the Cloud House, overlooking his friends and neighbours as they enjoyed a night of not worrying about the monster surge. Not everyone had that chance. He'd seen for himself the conditions of people boxed into fortress towns like cattle, to the point of having the cattle penned right alongside them. The local equivalent of the cow was an awkward-looking hexapedal lizard, which Jason found significantly less adorable but equally delicious. Jason felt the need to remind himself that for all the things piled on him, he had the power, money, and resources to do something about it. For all his struggles, the world was full of powerless people who would have traded places with him in an instant, given the chance. Now that he had his family back around him, it was time to stop worrying about his own problems so much and start thinking about the people who needed help more than he did.
Easier said than done, he murmured to himself.
Belinda came out of the house and joined him in leaning against the rail.
Brooding and talking to yourself, she said. I think Sophie might have dodged an arrow with you.
Yeah, Jason said. She probably did. So, her and Humphrey.
Yep. Sorry you gave up your chance.
No. She was looking for something in me she'll actually find in him. Plus, he's reliable when we both know I'm a bit of a flake. She's a smart woman, Humphrey's mother.
What's she got to do with anything?
You have to have realized he's a mum's boy by now. If she doesn't approve, it doesn't matter if Humphrey wants it. If she does approve, it doesn't matter if he doesn't.
So, no hard feelings about Soph?
I had someone while I was away. She helped me a lot. Helped me find Farah. All I brought her in return was death. If I ever just become some adventurer instead of the eye of a giant crap storm, maybe I'll look for someone new. I wouldn't inflict me on anyone at the moment. I'm kind of a mess right now.
Except us.
No, you're stuck with me, Jason said. I'm not letting you all get away from me again.
Chapter 54. Hegemon's Will. As Belinda left Jason on the balcony of the Cloud House, Humphrey came out to take her place, leaning against the railing next to Jason. Jason flashed him a smile before turning his gaze back out over the lagoon, shimmering with the light of twin moons.
We've come a long way from that waiting room in Greenstone where we met, Humphrey said. But I suppose you'd already been further to get that far.
That was quite a week for me. I didn't even give notice at work. Also, cannibals.
Jason, what you did.
Bad thing I did or good thing I did? You'll have to narrow it down. I'm very heroic, but also kind of a disaster.
You're not a disaster, Jason.
I did set off the monster surge.
Your friend Dawn told us you would. We made Clive promise not to pester you about it until at least the second day.
Jason snorted a laugh. He must have had spasms after meeting Dawn. It didn't take him long to overcome the glow of diamond rank and start interrogating her, no. She was surprisingly patient with him. She spent a year running around with me, so she's had the practice.
We all want to hear about it.
The recording crystal you sent left us with a lot of questions and not a lot of answers. You won't be able to get rid of me now, Jason said. We'll have plenty of time for that.
Good. Jason, by that thing you did, I meant taking the Builder's vessel with you off that tower. Did you know you would come back from that?
Didn't have a clue. How heroic was that? You should tell people about it all the time, by which I mean attractive women, just maybe not princesses, even though, you know,
damn, have you seen the princesses they have here?
I bet you've seen more princesses than me, but these ones seem frustratingly gorgeous. Humphrey shook his head, having quickly built up his Jason tolerance again.
Jason, what you did
is exactly what you would have done. So shut your handsome mouth right there, Cobber. I know what I did, so stick to telling the ladies, yeah? Now that you're off the market, I might actually get a look in. Humphrey went stiff.
Belinda told you?
Mate, I didn't need her to tell me. You and Sophie may not have been holding hands, but your auras were. You'll find my senses are a lot sharper than the last time you saw me.
It's new, her and me.
No, it's not, Jason said. Let me guess, you two were circling each other for a while, but your dead, rakishly charming friend was hanging over you like a ghost. Then, hey, he's suddenly alive, and you realize you don't want her getting confused because she used to have a thing for him, which finally got you to sack up.
That's not inaccurate,
Jason laughed.
Who pushed you, Lindy or your mum?
Lindy, Humphrey grumbled. Jason laughed again.
Mate, you don't have to worry about me. Sophie was always looking for you, she just didn't know it.
She thought I was a good guy because I'm the one that helped her first.
Jason slapped Humphrey on the back.
But you're the good guy, Humphrey. The way she grew up, she needs that. And so do I. I've found that I tend to lose my way, left to my own devices.
I need someone to keep me on the straight and narrow.
You are a good man, Jason.
Jason gave him a sad smile. Over the next little while, you're going to hear about the things I've done. I made allies, intending from the start to betray and kill them, which I did. Yesterday, I almost tore a man's soul out of his body because I was angry and I could. Shade pulled me back from that one. Humphrey stood up straight, turning to face Jason.
Jason, are you okay?
Jason also pushed himself off the railing, giving Humphrey another sad smile.
No, Humphrey, I'm not. But I will be. Now that you're here.
Jason sensed Sophie wandering alone along the trail leading down the cliff face to the main village. He masked his presence until he drew close, struck by her startling figure. With her delicate grace and the moonlight shining off her silver hair, she was a moon fairy in the night.
You're too quiet, she said, turning around to face him.
I've had to be, he said.
Things go poorly for men who sneak up on me.
Things have been going poorly for a while.
Our team could use a stealth guy. If you're nice, we might let you back in.
I probably won't be nice.
I'm guessing we'll let you in anyway. Humphrey's a soft touch.
A smile teased at the corners of his lips.
Is that so?
She shook her head.
I knew he'd tell you straight away.
He didn't have to. I could see it right away. It's sweet.
Are you making fun of me?
No, he said, giving her an honest smile instead of his trademark half-smirk. I know sincerity isn't really my thing, but I'm glad for you. Genuinely. At this point, I'll take happiness where I can find it. He turned to look out over the lagoon, and she stood beside him.
You're not doing so well, are you? She asked.
You, of all people, know how it feels when the bad seems like it's never going to end.
I do. But it does end, Jason. I found the team, and now you have too.
He nodded. She gave him a hesitant side glance.
I wasn't sure how I'd feel when I saw you.
And?
I was kind of a mess back when we knew each other.
I'm kind of a mess now.
I've known Humphrey for longer than I ever knew you, Jason. Been with him every day. Helping people isn't a responsibility to him. He cares about them, really cares. People he's never met. I never had that in my life, and I want it.
So you should. I know I do. I may not sleep with him, though. I haven't decided. She snorted a laugh.
You're still kind of a prick.
Yeah, Jason said with a chuckle. I kind of am. So, we've established I'm a garbage fire. How are you doing?
I'm good, she said. Great, really. And I wouldn't be if you hadn't put me on this path. I won't forget that.
You may recall that I messed things up pretty badly.
You helped me when no one else would have even thought about it. Not even Humphrey, which is why he values you so much. I'm not sure if I ever properly thanked you. I'll always owe you for that.
You'll never owe me for that. Friends don't count favors.
You say that, but your favors are kind of insane. Humphrey was angry at himself for a long time that he wasn't the one to take the builder off that tower.
Couldn't he barely stand?
You think he takes that into consideration?
Jason laughed, shaking his head. Of course he doesn't. You know that you two will have obnoxiously good-looking babies. She blanched.
It's more than a little early to be talking about that.
So you say. But are you willing to bet Danielle Geller doesn't have a timeline sketched out in a notebook somewhere?
Oh, God's his mother. She's like you, except she keeps her ears open instead of her mouth, which is terrifying.
She's probably already making plans for a brood of adorable chocolate babies with silver hair. Sophie let out a groan. Late in the evening, after the barbecue was done, Jason was scrubbing grill plates in the yard. He smiled, as someone let him sense her aura. It's starting to feel like I can summon diamond rankers by cleaning barbecues, he said, handing the plate to Shade as he turned around.
Thank you for bringing them here.
Dawn was standing in front of Jason, although her aura was completely invisible to him. She was in her true Celestine form, with ruby eyes and matching hair that glimmered like gemstones in the moonlight.
It seemed that all Celestines looked good under the moon.
I still don't want to overplay your importance by staying in the Cloud House, she told him. Soromir Rimeros gave me a pretense to bring them here, but I suspect that was the idea when you let my name slip. He certainly does.
I just wanted the option running around in his head. Not sure what gave him the push to bring you in already.
No one told you. Farah marched into the royal palace and gave him a talking to.
Seriously?
Oh, yes.
Good for her.
That's the behavior you want to encourage. Of course, you being a bad influence shouldn't surprise me. I know that from experience.
Jason pointed an accusing finger.
I knew it! I knew you took the recording crystals with all my songs by Kenny Rogers in the first edition.
It was easy enough for you to make more. I was leaving the universe.
You could have mentioned that in the recording you left me. I almost didn't realize they were missing in time to re-record them before we left as well.
You wanted me to add a bit about Kenny Rogers to the message where I told you the rules a great astral being has to abide by when trying to kill you.
You need to get your priorities in order. I don't care about the Builder. That guy sucks. Kenny Rogers is an icon, and his stuff with First Edition before he went solo? That's the good stuff.
They both looked up at the balcony, where Jason's house guests were all watching him argue with the Diamond Ranker about something they'd never heard of.
Well, this is ridiculous, Neil said, turning to go back inside. That didn't take long.
As Neil left, shaking his head, Farah gave Dawn a casual wave.
I thought everyone was asleep,
Jason mumbled into Gary's chest.
What happened to the guy who wasn't a hugger?
I realize that you can't fight destiny,
Gary said, letting Jason go.
That's definitely not true, Jason said.
It's kind of my whole thing.
Well, Gary said, maybe this will help with that.
He took a sword from a dimensional bag and held it out for Jason. The hilt was black with a bone handle and white embellishments. The scabbard was simple black lacquer with a dark metal tip and very minor patterning of white and dark red.
I had some help with it. The scabbard is new, but we incorporated it into the item. Magically, it's a part of the sword.
Jason took a hold of the sword by the scabbard.
You have acquired the complete regalia of the Dark Hegemon. All set effect bonuses to items within the set are restored.
Set bonus, item, Amulet of the Dark Guardian. For each instance of an affliction applied to an enemy, gain an instance of Hegemon's Authority. Hegemon's Authority, boon, holy, unholy, stacking. All allies within your aura have increased resistance to aura suppression. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. Consume instances of this boon to enhance your aura suppression strength. Set bonus. Item. Cloud Flask. Shrouds the wearer in mist. Mist can be controlled through aura manipulation to condense into small cloud constructs. Cloud constructs created in this manner only maintain integrity against attacks lower than the rank of this item. Attacks of its rank and above are minimally impeded. Shroud can be withdrawn into the flask. Set bonus. Item. Hegemon's Will. Enemies struck with this weapon are subjected to a mild mana drain effect and are inflicted with Hegemon's Tribute. Hegemon's Tribute. Affliction. Magic. Anyone affected by Hegemon's Tribute is subject to a mild, ongoing mana drain effect by the wielder of Hegemon's Will, so long as they remain within the wielder's aura. If this affliction is cleansed or the subject dies, a final burst of mana is drained.
Because he was holding the scabbard, it was the first item Jason was able to observe.
Item: Hegemon's Dominion, Silver Rank, Growth, Legendary. The scabbard to Hegemon's Will. Hegemon's Dominion is the embodiment of a hegemonic control, representing the hegemon's mastery of his domain. Container, scabbard. This item is bound to Jason Asano and cannot be used by anyone else. This bond allows the weapon to share the wielder's ability to ignore rank disparity. This item is magically bound to Hegemon's Will. They are treated as the same item for all magical effects. Effect. Instances of afflictions affecting the wielder are periodically moved to this item, removing their effects from the wielder.
This is not a cleansing effect. The rate of transfer is affected by the relative rank of the effects to the wielder. Suppressing the originator of the effect's aura increases the rate of transfer. The wielder being aura suppressed reduces the rate of transfer. If Hegemon's will is sheathed, all afflictions are transferred to the weapon and affect the next enemy struck. Any effects resisted or subject to immunity are negated and cannot be passed to an alternate target. Current rank, silver. Looking over the growth conditions, Jason noticed the weapon's growth was no longer capped by rank. The materials required for an upgrade, however, were all materials Jason had never heard of and were presumably gold rank.
"It's going to be fairly rough to upgrade," Gary admitted. "It was a strange crafting process, to be honest. It's almost like the sword knew how it wanted to be reforged."
"That makes sense," Jason said. "Based on a fight I lost recently, this ability on the scabbard is exactly what I needed." Jason looked up at Gary.
"You're amazing," he said, then grabbed the hilt.
Item: Hegemon's Will, Silver Rank, Growth, Legendary. A precious gift imbued with the soul of its owner and reforged with a renewed sense of purpose. The aid of a grandmaster craftsman in the reforging process has produced a flawless result. Weapon, sword. This item is bound to Jason Asano and cannot be used by anyone else. This bond allows the weapon to share the wielder's ability to ignore rank disparity. Effect. You may invoke all effects of a conjured weapon into this blade for the normal mana cost of conjuring the weapon. Only one weapon's effects may be invoked at a time. Effect. While invoking a conjured weapon, you may inflict additional damage for an ongoing mana cost. Damage type is based on the invoked weapon and mana cost is based on the nature of the damage. Amount of damage is based on aura strength of the wielder. Damage is increased to the degree to which the enemy attacked has their aura suppressed and decreased by the degree to which the wielder has their aura suppressed. Available invocation. Ruin. The Blade of Tribulation. Ongoing mana cost. Low. Damage type. Corrosive. Inflicts corrosion. Available invocation. Penitent. The Blade of Sacrifice. Ongoing mana cost. Moderate. Damage type. Disruptive force. Effect. The wielder may cleanse all holy afflictions inflicted by the abilities and soul-bound items of the wielder from an enemy touched by Hegemon's Will. For each affliction cleansed, the enemy suffers an instance of Hegemon's Mercy, and the wielder gains an instance of Benevolent Hegemon. Effect: Regalia of the Hegemon. Enemies struck with this weapon are subjected to a mild mana drain effect and are inflicted with Hegemon's Tribute, and the wielder gains an instance of Benevolent Hegemon. Corrosion, affliction, damage over time, elemental, stacking. Inflicts corrosive damage, which has increased effectiveness against inorganic substances. Additional instances have increased effect. Hegemon's Mercy, affliction, holy, stacking. The victim of this effect is subjected to a powerful suppressive force affecting all magical abilities. This affects essence abilities, innate abilities, and item abilities. Abilities derived from external transcendent sources are affected more strongly. This affliction drops off rapidly when not within the area of the wielder of Hegemon's Will's aura. Additional instances have increased effect. Benevolent Hegemon. Boon, holy, stacking. The effect strength of allied auras overlapping your aura is increased. This does not affect suppressive strength or resistance to aura suppression. Additional instances have increased effect. Hegemon's Tribute. Affliction. Magic. Anyone affected by Hegemon's Tribute is subject to a mild, ongoing mana drain effect by the wielder of Hegemon's Will, so long as they remain within the wielder's aura. If this affliction is cleansed or the subject dies, a final burst of mana is drained. Jason drew the sword, running his gaze up and down the black blade with stark white sigils in awe. The white sigils on the blade started glowing life force red. You have invoked the effects of Ruin, Blade of Tribulation. All properties of that weapon have been imbued into Hegemon's Will. Necrotic damage will be inflicted in addition to physical damage. The sigils then turned from red to a rich blue. You have stopped invoking the effects of Ruin, Blade of Tribulation. You have invoked the effects of Penitent, the Blade of Sacrifice. All properties of that weapon have been imbued into Hegemon's Will. Disruptive force damage will be inflicted in addition to physical damage.
Gary, Jason said reverently. It's like finding a part of myself I didn't know was missing.
You brought Farrah back to us, Gary said. That part I did know was missing.
Chapter 55. A Story About a Magic Trowel. Jason and Farrah sat on the balcony of his cloud house in the morning sun. As Tyker and Travis came from inside, chairs made of cloud stuff rose from the floor.
It's time for the long version of how you two arrived here, Jason told them as they sat.
No worries, bro. It started with that bug standing stone thing you two made on the footy field in that abandoned town. No one was stupid enough to go near it while you were still around, although I'm pretty sure every country with a satellite was pointing it your way. There were also people on the ground watching you from kilometres away.
We were aware of them, Farrah said.
Things changed when you left, Travis said, picking up the explanation. You went through one of Jason's archways, and then what we're pretty sure was a big dimensional rift opened up. It looked like a portal, except that it covered the whole area of your standing stones, with only the outermost ones containing it.
It was stable? Jason asked.
Once it popped up, it was solid as a rock, bro!
And all the factions got curious, Jason said.
They were hesitant at first, Travis said. Once they were pretty sure you weren't coming back out, though, they all swarmed the place like they used to do with transformation zones.
The Yanks were first, Tyker said. They started throwing stuff in to see what happened, even threw in some people.
They didn't come back out, Travis added.
You wouldn't catch me volunteering for that, bro.
And so you shouldn't, Farrah said. If they didn't go through at the same time as the rest of you, I doubt they survived. Unless they got caught up in whatever brought you here safely, those people are dead. Only someone like Jason could normally survive that passage, and even he had a limited window of viability.
Until I complete the bridge, Jason said, anything that tries to travel it will get dumped into the deep astral. Farrah and I got here riding the initial backwash from cutting off the magic pipeline to our world and riding that wave back as it triggered the monster surge here.
Then how did we survive? Travis asked.
We'll get to that later, Jason said.
You were talking about the Americans and their early testing?
Nothing anyone put in there came back, Tyker said. So they stopped chucking stuff in and settled in to study it.
Earth doesn't have any astral magic specialists, Farrah said. The grasp of magic theory there is quite limited and focused on magitech. They wouldn't learn much from the rift.
Don't underestimate the scientific method, Travis said. It might take years, even decades of careful study, but the potential gains from having access to it could accelerate our understanding of dimensional magic far beyond what it would otherwise reach. I don't think they were wrong to study it. Knowledge for its own sake is a noble endeavor.
I know a goddess who will love you, Jason said.
A goddess? Travis said.
Oh yeah, Tyker said. They turn up in person here, right?
Yep, Jason said. In fact, I'll take Travis to the Temple of Knowledge today. We need to know if she's going to be wary of you introducing knowledge from our world. She was sketchy about me doing it, but I think now that was mostly an excuse for her to do other things. Plus you actually know things instead of having just heard them.
You're talking like there's no way of going home, Tyker said. You did, can't we?
Not interested, Travis said. My family cut me off after I helped you steal that nuke, and, well, I never had a lot of friends.
There won't be another chance to go back for a long time, Jason said. I'm going to open a path, but it will be years before it's ready to use. I'm sorry, Tyker. I know you didn't want to leave your family.
My mum will probably think I'm dead,
the big man said sadly.
Can't Dawn take us back? She can move between universes, right?
Earth is too fragile for a dimensional vessel to enter without causing damage, Farrah said. The Dawn you met on Earth was just a projection, like a living phone call from another dimension.
It's just one little flying cottage, Tyker said. That won't break a whole world, will it?
The tip of a needle is also tiny, Jason said. It's still very bad news for a balloon. Maybe she can get word back to the families of the people who wound up here. We'll have to ask her after we get a handle on who arrived here.
Which brings us back to the question of what happened to bring you all here, Farrah said.
With all the people poking around your big magic thing, Tyker said, Jason's grandmother decided to send some people from Clan Asano to check it out.
The clan doesn't have a lot of people with strong magical theory knowledge, Travis said. Mostly Hiro and Emmy, who were both taught by you, Farrah. Matriarch Yumi wouldn't let either of them within 1,000 kilometers of that place, though. Wouldn't even let them go back to Australia and keep them in Jason's astral space cities. That left me, and Tyker came along to help keep me safe.
I'm not up to facing some of those network people, Tyker admitted. But with you two gone, the clan's silver rankers were halved. Just Akari and her old man left.
We weren't getting too close to the rift or in anyone's way, Travis said. We just wanted a general sense of what the factions were up to.
Doesn't matter, Tyker said. One day out of nowhere, the thing suddenly expands outwards, sweeps over the camp. I know there were some gold rankers I sensed moving out of the way, and I think the silvers that weren't too close got away as well.
But we're a category 2, Travis said. I guess I have to call it bronze rank here. Tyker is fast and maybe could have gotten away because we were in the outer areas, but he was slowed down carrying me and didn't get clear.
The rift swept over us, and that's where things get funny, Tyker said. I don't really remember stuff after that until I woke up in a crater, except that I kind of do remember stuff. That's weird.
Like, you remember emotions, but not when or why you felt them? Jason said.
Yeah, that's exactly it, Tyker agreed.
That's because your soul experienced things that your body didn't, Jason said. It's happened to me enough times that I've become familiar.
What happened to our bodies? Travis asked.
They were annihilated, Jason said. You died and came back. Welcome to the Resurrection Club. I'm the president, but it's a largely ceremonial position. Jason went on to explain the concept of outworlders to Travis and Tyker. As he did, Clive wandered out from inside, he and Farrah helping clarify things as Jason's explanation wandered into tangents and confusingly elaborate analogies based around action-adventure television. And that show was going to be called Viper, but there was another show coming out called Viper that had a Dodge Viper in it. So the car company sued the non-car show, and they changed the name to Cobra. And that's kind of how a human turns into an outworlder.
The first thing you need to do, Clive said, is ignore everything Jason just said, because it was nonsense.
That's good advice in general, Farrah added.
Hey, Jason complained.
I liked Viper, Tyker said.
Of course you did, Jason told him. It was crap Knight Rider again.
I suppose you preferred Cobra, Tyker said. It didn't even have a science fiction car.
It had Michael Dudikoff, Jason said.
He was the American Ninja. Bro, that movie sucked.
Will you both stop, Farrah said. I hate to break it to you boys, but all of that stuff was terrible. All of it.
Coming from someone who thinks Beyond Thunderdome was the best Mad Max movie.
It was. Auntie Entity is an iconic character.
Clive and Travis watched the three arguing. Clive shuffled closer, his cloud chair shifting with him.
Did this kind of thing happen a lot over there?
Yep, Travis said. For someone who claims to not like television, Farrah borrowed DVDs from Jason's dad a lot.
What are DVDs?
Eventually, the conversation got back on track. Clive postulated an early hypothesis of what had triggered the rift expansion on Earth.
Random dimensional events connecting worlds are a normal, if extremely rare, thing, Clive said. Because there is a link between your world and ours, though, that frequency is increased. Even so, the right conditions for such an event to move someone from your world to ours are extremely rare. Jason, you were brought here because such an event just so happened to coincide with Landomir Vane trying to summon a clockwork king to this world.
That's what he was doing in that basement? Jason asked. No wonder it went wrong. He didn't have the power to stage that kind of ritual.
He had support, Clive said. The more we learn, the more we understand just how much more advanced than ours the Builder's astral magic is. After we came back from the astral space, where you died, Jason, the old Vane estate was completely excavated. We discovered the cult was living underground in the cave system there.
Weren't we right on top of that at one point? Jason asked.
We were,
Clive said. I should have had Shade go scout it out when Henrietta didn't want us to go down there. I'd just gotten him as a familiar and I wasn't thinking about all the awesome ways he could help me yet.
I should have suggested it, Shade said from Jason's shadow. As you said, it was the start of our relationship, and I did not want to overstep. I was yet to learn that sometimes you need to be pushed, Mr. Asano, and that sometimes you need to be thrown.
It was for the best, Clive said. There was a small army of them. If we found them, they would have killed us and decamped before anyone came looking. We should count ourselves lucky they didn't want to be revealed and come after us.
What did they find when they excavated the place? Farah asked.
Powerful builder magic tools. Broken after the failed summoning attempt, but very powerful.
There was a ritual circle set into the floor, Jason said. I remember that.
We think that was a device to hide the real tools from Landomir's family, Clive said. You may remember that while he was a builder cultist, the rest of his family belonged to a blood cult called the Red Table.
Oh, we remember, Farah said.
Are they related to a great astral being as well? Jason asked.
No, Farah said. They're just a group that likes to explore the kinds of blood and death magic that get you hunted down by the Adventure Society.
Anyway, Clive continued, the point is that Landomir's summoning went wrong, maybe because he was trying to go beyond his ability, or maybe it was impacted by the dimensional event. Whatever the case, the result was that the summoning ritual was like a beacon, yanking Jason's soul to the Vayne estate.
And you think this grand summoning event in Vitesse did the same thing? Farah surmised.
Yes, Clive said, but on a much larger scale. Instead of a natural dimensional event, we have this bridge you and Jason established using the link between worlds.
The bridge isn't complete, Jason said.
Which is why anything that followed it would get annihilated, Clive said. But you can't annihilate a soul. I think that your bridge and the massive summoning event might have converged after our team disrupted the summoning. It caused the right conditions on your world to expand the rift and draw people in, and the summoning was the beacon that pulled the loose souls into our world, turning them into outworlders. Essentially the same thing that happened to you, Jason, but on a massive scale.
And now there's 100-something outworlders from Earth, Jason said, running a hand over his face. Do we know anything about who they are?
They're a mix of factions, Tyker said. Everyone but the vampires, because they're cull on sight now. The handful that came over to team Let's Not Have a Blood Apocalypse have to be careful about showing themselves because of friendly fire. After you left, they made their move.
Great, Jason said. Vampire war.
They aren't stupid enough to touch your domains, Travis said. The clan and the transformation zone's refugees they took in are hunkered down and safe. The reason the Silver Rankers didn't come to Australia with us is that we keep them on standby for anyone who needs to leave the domains, and we were going out for too long to have them tied up.
Domains? Clive asked.
I'll explain later, Jason said. And no one talks about them outside of this building. Is that clear?
Why not? Travis asked.
Because I'm fairly confident we can't be overheard here, Jason said. But out there is different. I have more than enough trouble to be going on with, and I'm not looking for any more.
That doesn't sound like you,
Clive said. I learn slow, and it usually needs to get beaten into me a few times, Jason told him.
But I do learn. That sounds more like you, Clive said.
Tell me about the Outworlder group, Jason said to Tyker and Travis. Anyone else I know?
I'm pretty sure, yeah, Tyker confirmed. I don't think they told anyone they know you, though, which is why Travis and I were picked out from the bunch. The others are all scared of you now they don't have their organizations to back them. A lot of groups didn't treat you so well when they had all the power and thought they could get away with it.
And now they aren't the hegemons anymore, Jason said, resting a hand on the pommel of his sword. I've even got the hegemonic hegemon sword of hegemony.
The what?
Clive asked. Jason invited the group to his party and brought up the description of his sword for them to see.
Oh yeah, that's the stuff,
Clive said happily as a system box appeared in front of him. I somehow feel dirty, Jason said. Just read it, without licking it preferably.
This seems good,
Clive said, glancing over the description.
It's heavily reliant on aura strength. I know your aura's strong, but is it strong enough to sustain this kind of weapon?
I think he'll be fine, Farrah said.
What's a hegemony?
Taika asked as he peered at the item description.
It's like every fourth word, bro. Is it something to do with hedges?
Hedges?
Jason asked.
Yeah, bro. I remember you telling us a story about a magic trowel. Is this a gardening sword?
Chapter 56. What It Sent Us. Happy with his service to date, Soromir had Trenchant Moore assigned full-time to assist Liara and himself. While Trenchant could and would also assist Vespa, she remained a silver ranker and could not be given authority over a gold, even if she was a princess and he a royal guard. It was part of the complex hierarchical interplay between the royal family and their guard force of elite adventurers. In the office he had been assigned, Moore was going over the reports of Asano's expedition. The expedition leader who made the report was unclear how Asano had turned the builders' forces against themselves, while being very clear on the inadequacy of Asano's explanation.
What does "got to get funky" mean? He murmured to himself as he read.
It was yet another mystery surrounding the man. His connection to the diamond ranker that even Soromir was deferential to was still unknown, as was his repeated returns from the grave, according to the Church of Death. Soromir had told him it had something to do with a rival entity to the Builder and the unusual nature of the current monster surge. Their current best guess was that it was related to Asano's original world, which was how someone of such low rank had been caught up in cosmic events. Soromir had postulated that Asano had been caught up in events from the moment he arrived in their world the first time. Trenchant didn't envy Asano becoming entangled in the agenda of such powerful forces before he was even an Iron Ranker, fighting through death over and over, facing down beings from beyond reality. And that was ignoring the relatively normal messes that surrounded him as an adventurer and an outworlder. He could see how someone wouldn't find a gold ranker intimidating after all that, and even become quite unhinged. It was clear that Asano had been profoundly affected by the forces pressuring him. Trenchant was still a little unnerved by Asano's cloud house. It reminded him of a still lake with a monster slumbering somewhere in the depths. He had no reason to feel that way, yet he became more certain the more he thought about it. Asano's aura was monstrous. Trenchant knew well the kind of suffering it took to do that to a soul, as well as the time and struggle to recover from it. He was curious as to what his friend Amos would make of Asano, and he would find out soon enough. Trenchant had been directed, once Asano's team was registered for local activity, to deliver the team an invitation to a social event. The idea of having a ball amidst a monster surge did not sit well with Trenchant, but he understood the necessity. The wealthy and noble houses of Rimuros were an intricately threaded tapestry on which the Storm Kingdom rested. There could be no worse time for that tapestry to fray or develop holes. There was also a more personal element to it that left Trenchant uncertain. Farrah Hurin was a fierce, passionate, and courageous woman he had found immediately compelling, although there were many reasons not to pursue it. Her connection to Asano was certainly one, and she had her own mysteries. She was also young, which would not matter at Silver Rank if she was 40 or 50, but she was 27. 26, discounting the year she had been dead, which would put her at less than a quarter of Trenchant's own age.
Your aura is a little turbulent, Commander Moore.
Trenchant Moore's senses were sharp and his aura control was impeccable. It was not enough to prevent Soromir from seeing through him, however, or from entering his office unnoticed.
I've been dwelling on Asano's cloud house, Trenchant said. He had been dealing with people stronger than him for decades and was an old hand at not revealing anything, even when his aura was being read. He knew well that saying true things was not the same as speaking the truth.
Asano's cloud house is a curiosity, Soromir said. If I hadn't seen its connection to him in his aura, I would have believed it belonged to someone else.
Why?
Commander Moore, you have already encountered something similar many times. The comparison has simply not occurred to you because it's a little outrageous.
What do you mean?
How often do you think my senses encounter a location into which they are utterly unable to penetrate?
Very rarely. My understanding is that even the defenses of the Royal Sky Island are unable to block your perception.
On the contrary, Commander, it is something my senses pass over every day, as do yours. Our city has many of them. Every major city does.
Trenchant frowned as his mind ticked over. What could shut out a perception as powerful as temples, he realized.
Exactly, Saramir said. The innermost thresholds of temples, their most sacred locations, are impervious to my senses. And I can tell that the rest could be as well if the forces behind those temples wished it. But they do not obstruct their visitors. Only the most sacred locations are completely shielded from external observation.
You're saying Asano's cloud house is a temple?
The way it blocks senses is the same.
You think his cloud house is empowered by this great astral being, the World Phoenix?
It was my first thought, but I dismissed it immediately. I've seen the depths of Asano's soul reflected in his aura. While I don't understand or recognize everything I saw inside it, he could not hide anything from me. If there was a star seed of the World Phoenix inside Asano, I would have seen it.
In fact, he cannot be implanted with a star seed at all.
Because he is a gestalt being, Trenchant surmised. You noticed.
I have encountered a true messenger in the past, not just a summon. I know the feeling of an aura that seems almost physically substantial.
Where did you encounter a true messenger?
Saramir asked. Hot Silver Mountain.
Ah, you're a survivor of the Celestial Sword.
Yes, sir.
Saramir paused to look over Trenchant with freshly assessing eyes.
What are you doing, serving my family, Trenchant Moor?
My duty, sir. As my family has done since you founded this kingdom.
Since the beginning. I'm sorry, Commander Moore, but I don't remember your ancestor.
We were only a minor family in your service, Ancestral Majesty.
But a loyal one, it would seem.
We do our best. If this World Phoenix is not responsible for the properties of Asano's cloud house, what is?
That is what troubles me, Saramir said. I can't examine the cloud house, but I can tell from Asano that it truly is bonded to him. Since he is not a vessel for the World Phoenix's power, that means Asano himself is responsible.
Unless it is a property of the house and not Asano.
It is not. I contacted the woman who crafted it, and she confirmed that the original item was an ordinary device, if you can say that about any cloud flask. There is nothing you could feed it that would produce this effect, except perhaps at diamond rank. She was certain that any effect on that level has to come from the person bonded to it, and would require a deeper bond than was ordinary for the item. She's quite anxious to take a look after our conversation.
Then either Asano or this great astral being has modified it, but the properties it exhibits somehow come from Asano.
As I said, I have observed the depths of his aura thoroughly enough to examine his soul. He has magical bonds with some of his items, but also with some things I suspect remain in his universe of origin. I believe that is where the secret lies.
And what course of action will you be taking? Trenchant asked.
Saramir didn't answer immediately, taking a piece of fruit from the dimensional pouch at his waist and biting into it. Trenchant waited for Saramir to chew unhurriedly and swallow.
I've known from the beginning that Asano was unusual, Saramir eventually said. The way he arrived in the Storm Kingdom made that clear enough.
I was already investigating him when Liara and Vespa came looking for a diamond ranker to examine his aura. I decided to take a closer look and test how strong his senses were. He sensed me much earlier than I anticipated.
Did you reveal yourself on purpose, then?
Yes. From everything I've managed to learn about Asano, he needs to be handled delicately. Mysteries and powerful forces orbit him like moons. The day will come
when he is no longer outmatched by those forces, and when that day comes, I don't want the Storm Kingdom to be on the list of his enemies.
You think he'll come looking for vengeance?
Oh, yes. There are two kinds of adventurers, Commander Moore. You are the first type. Reliable, efficient, and supremely capable. You advanced because of the way you conduct yourself. You are the kind of adventurer that everyone wants to work with. Asano is the other kind. Wild, erratic, improvisational. These are not the people you want to work with, but they are the ones who become legends. Usually by repeatedly surviving the kind of challenges that adventurers like you are smart enough to avoid.
You think he'll reach Diamond if he lives long enough?
Which is why I want to establish good relations now. But that's tricky with a man like him. He is highly averse to any kind of institutional power, so impressing him with our authority doesn't help. Nor can we be generous and accommodating because he wouldn't trust it. Vespa is excellent because her hostility meets his expectations, and I can stop her from going too far. Ironically, the pathway to the trust of a man like Jason Asano is